Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get infographics, comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments. And here's Brett.
I'm still not where I want to be because that's a good way to be in life.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah. I've made a lot of progress. It's felt like now has been the time to shift more towards do more things kind of based on your instincts and intuition, because you do know a few things, but there's costs and drawbacks and there's fail points of trying to make sure everything is like this perfectly rigid, organized system that it gets followed and gets processed this way every single time. A lot of things that might break a specific rule set of your organizational system really don't matter.
Yeah, and in comparing the two systems, one of the principles of getting things done that might be a little bit outdated is certainly an idea that I picked up. Even if I made this mistake, I think it was sort of implicit in what David Allen was suggesting, was that just be a vacuum cleaner and go out and get everything, you know, and just put it in your inbox. And that's why it's such an arduous task to initially set the system up, because you have to gather like everything that you have. But what did everything that you have mean in 2002 or even in 2012, 10 years later, right? Versus like how much information for doing certain types of knowledge work or content creation you could be gathering haphazardly or unintentionally. And when I say unintentionally, I don't mean by accident. I mean without intentionality about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So the simplifying of the system is Tiago Forte step one, remember. So that's a useful adaptation on capture, right? Capture is what a vacuum does.
Yep.
Capture is what a fishnet does. You know, remember is about adding some intentionality to the things you're gathering based on maybe like some bigger picture awareness of what you're creating. David Allen was right. The world of knowledge work is ever-changing and it can be chaotic and you might not know what you need. But because the input overload is so much greater today, I think you have to be more discerning at that initial step.
Hey, this is Brett. Today is Thursday, March 11th. And I am just delighted to be welcoming Alex Bell back to the program. Oh, you don't know about Alex Bell, young Alex? He's been on the show several times before. He made his School Sucks debut on the Weekend with Thaddeus Russell show. He was one of the attendees of that event who came up and got on the mic when we did the podcast at the very end of the event. And we've done several shows since then. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the conversation you're about to hear. Alex has been part of the School Sucks world for a long time. He started listening when he was a teen. He was basically the avatar that I was trying to connect with all those years ago. He started as a listener, then he became a supporter, then he became a contributor, and even an advisor. And after we met in Salem, Massachusetts in 2017, he became a friend. And since then, he's become actually one of my closest friends. Even though he's so young, he's just 28 years old. Alex is a copywriter. He's a content marketer and a consultant. He did not go to college. We did a whole conversation about that called Skipping College Isn't Easy back in 2018. And he returns today to talk about Tiago Forte's methodology called Building a Second Brain. This is something that I have mentioned on the show since I first heard about it in 2019. It is kind of a modification on David Allen's Getting Things Done. And at the end of 2020, I did a yearly review. I looked at my productivity and organization system, and I realized it needed some improvements, but those improvements had to come in the form of simplification. So today's show is fairly advanced on the topic of organization and productivity. A couple of recommendations that I would make if you are new but interested in this endeavor. If you're really pressed for time and you just want a quick introduction, go on YouTube and just find Getting Things Done Overview. I'm sure you can find like one of those little animated explainer videos of how Getting Things Done works. And I assume the same is true for Building a Second Brain. But we have in the past dove deep into this topic of organization and productivity a la Getting Things Done. We did a 6-part series back in 2013 called Presence and Productivity. And back in January of 2016, we did the School Sucks Project Productivity Month, one of our finest achievements with an amazing list of guests and topics. including Jake DeSillis, our friend Kevin Geary, a New York Times bestselling author named Kevin Cruz, entrepreneur and one of the former hosts of Healthy Mind, Fit Body podcast, Kevin Costello. There was three Kevins. It was just that kind of a month. Daryl Becker, Drew Sample, Nathan Frazier. I mean, how did I fit all this into one month? We talked about mastermind groups. We talked about habit. We talked about advanced productivity tools, time mastery. I did a complete video tutorial on how I use Evernote with getting things done. We talked about goal setting, horizons of focus, which is a GTD concept. So there's 15 hours of material there. But if you're new to this, that'd be a lovely place to start. Today's show is more for people who are looking to update or simplify these tools and systems that we have promoted in the past. I certainly found myself at the end of 2020 feeling that need. So this is a conversation in two parts. Alex and I are planning to record the second piece on project management tomorrow, and that will be out next week. Today, we do an overview of the principles of building a second brain. But I wanted everyone to be able to walk away with two new actionable pieces of knowledge. One is called PARA. That is sort of the organizing principle of building a second brain. It's an acronym: projects, areas of responsibility, resources, and archive. We'll explain how all that works. I'll explain how that has helped me. Alex will explain how that has not helped me enough yet because I'm still clutching on to the complexity of my old system too much. And the other one is called progressive summarization, which is a way to be more intentional with the taking of notes. So those notes are more useful in the future and more accessible. So we'll talk about that in detail as well. So even if you don't want to embrace building a second brain, you're still going to walk away with valuable new concepts that you might be able to integrate into what you are already doing. This is one of my favorite things to pleasure myself to in public. Without shame. It's just one of the great things that I learned from Thaddeus Russell. Why should you be directing any judgment towards yourself just because you have your pants down in front of thousands of people? It's fine. But there's also been some really good outcomes and updates from learning more about Forte's Building a Second Brain methodology. So I'm really happy to be sharing them with you today. Other than that, hey, look, we are a listener-supported show. And the two primary ways that I'm asking people to do that right now are either to sign up as a patron on Patreon. That's patreon.com/schoolsucks. And I am really trying to build this locals community where anybody can come and join and get the kinds of updates you used to get in the School Sucks group. Sorry, by the way, that I included an intro in the last show that said, join our Facebook group. There is no such thing for you to join. There are bigger and bolder things that I want to do with this brand, and the foundation and reassurance that I get from listener support is really, really valuable in that pursuit. I had a conversation, private conversation, with Landon Porter yesterday from Dude, It's a Game. He used to be the host of the Sales Guerrilla podcast. I've worked with him in the past. I'm going to be working with him again in the future. I'm very, very excited about all of that. But he was asking me more questions yesterday about what I do and why and what I see as my purpose. And he asked me that question, and I launched into a half an hour speech about the motivation behind this project. This is something that I have not lost sight of, something that I think I've actually regained sight of in the last 4 to 6 months. But one of the lamentations during that speech that I gave to Landon was how polluted the internet is with disposable content. People are producing videos and audios that are completely useless 1 to 3 days after they're initially released. They draw a bunch of people in based on rage bait and sell ads and then become utterly useless. I have tried to give every single episode of this podcast its own unique signature, unique artwork, unique music. This is feedback that I've gotten. It is exciting to start an episode of this show because you don't know what's going to happen. We cover a wide array of topics only bound by these four content pillars: the reasons why school sucks, personal development, which is what we're talking about today, critical thinking and learning, and alternative education, right? So that's one problem, three solutions, and that's how I organize the content here. And almost all of it is evergreen. Did I get a little wild a few years ago with all the higher education social justice stuff? Sure. Oh, wait a minute. That's more relevant. I think I said back then, wait till this stuff spills out into the real world. It's going to be bad. And here's an example of what I'm talking about. Like, Even the productivity shows that we did in 2013, Presence and Productivity was the series where we did this long form exploration of getting things done. And I think a very educational, entertaining, and accessible kind of way. Well, the information landscape has changed a lot. And I think, you know, whether we're talking about in my own life or in the bigger picture here, that content could use a little bit of updating. And we're back to do that. But podcasting is forever. But this is part of like what I was saying to Landon. It's here as long as the internet in its current form exists, which is at least another 4 to 6 months. And the voluntary value exchange that people do is the absolute most important signal that I can receive. I could go on and on about this, but what I'm saying is I try to make every single one of these episodes unique and special, because why not create the best permanent record of these kinds of explorations? It's worth it to me, and I'm needing people to demonstrate that it is worth it to them. And I'm saying all this because I am finding myself feeling a little bit frustrated lately. This ebbs and flows. It's ebbed and flowed for years. But we were doing phenomenally on Patreon just a few months ago. And since then, just really, it's like almost alarming how fast the support on Patreon has dropped off. I don't know why. In exit surveys, the most common response is my financial situation changed. Well, I know there's a lot of people who listen to this show and your financial situation is changing too, but for the better. People are always going to go out and new people always have to come in. So that's it. That's my speech. Thanks for listening. And again, it's patreon.com/schoolsucks and schoolsucksproject.locals.com. I know it's very common. We hear these kinds of messages, these kinds of requests from content creators, and we say the other guy will do it. The other guy in this case is you. So here's part one of two of my conversation on building a second brain with my dear friend, Alex Bell. Thanks for listening. If you are a supporting listener, be on the lookout for a fine University discussion group from this past Sunday, a wide array of topics. And I'll also be releasing our first University book club on the six pillars of self-esteem before the end of this week as well. Thanks for listening and take care.
A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C.
1, 2, 3.
A, B, C.
1, 2, 3.
A, B, C.
1, 2, 3.
Robotics.
1, 2, 3.
Try it in some.
Simple as that, feels simple as. Ask about that, pretty simple man. I'm dreaming on good for a sicker plan. Sicker than any other nigga could be thinking that. I can't be a loser cause they figured that. I can't be a lame, I'm cooler than that. I feel I love the fame, then I hate it back. Thinking now what I should be twittering. Why big bro take out the hot bitches? Dear God, me too, I like the hot bitches. I be the underdog all along till I'm gone. I will live through a song, I'll be strong through the haters. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that.
1, 2, 3. Alex Bell, welcome back to School Sucks.
Thanks for having me, Brett Vinat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is your third, fourth, fifth appearance on the show?
I don't know, because I lost track when I did one or two Discomfort Zones, so I don't know what counts as a real School Sucks. Or...
Well, you were on the Salem show with Thad.
Yep.
Right?
Intro.
That was, yes. Where else? You and I did a show, just the two of us together, at my house in Pittsburgh. We did a show with your friend Ben.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we've done a couple of Discomfort Zones as well. So today we're actually going to be talking about something that I've been meaning to cover on this show since I first heard about it in 2019. Mm-hmm. And you told me that you have been implementing it. So we're going to talk about Tiago Forte's Building a Second Brain. My friend Moritz. Do you know Moritz?
Moritz. I remember I am completely spacing on his last name and the project he was working on.
Barreling. And he worked on Exosphere for a while.
Okay.
And he did his own thing. But he gave a whole presentation about this. Unfortunately, for everybody listening, it's inside the Ideas into Action Summit. And
We covered a couple other things as well, but this was a big part of his presentation. And since then, that was my first encounter with building a second brain. I have been wondering how useful it was as far as like an update to my productivity system, which doesn't work perfectly.
Yeah.
And I did my year-end review at the end of 2020, and I realized things had gotten a little messy. There was a lot of stuff accumulating there that was not actionable. In fact, I did a kind of audit and found that about 10% of the stuff that I was saving was ever turned into any kind of an action. And that seemed like not enough. I don't know. I mean, what
that
do you find?
That seems like a lot to me.
10% is made actionable.
So I think I have 3,000 some notes in Evernote now.
Yeah.
It's slowed down a lot over the past couple of years since I moved away from there, from trying to like implement tasks and projects like notes.
Yeah.
I wasn't super intentional about it for a long time, but for me, it always has been just a place to really capture everything.
Yeah.
Which I think was their tagline at some point, maybe.
Evernote? But, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you use the Evernote web clipper?
I was, yeah.
Oh, it's delightful, but quite dangerous.
It's, yeah. I mean, if you want to have an inbox zero, good luck. Good luck.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I went wild with that for years and probably accumulated 4, maybe almost 5,000 notes since I started using my Evernote in 2013. Mm-hmm. So obviously my audience is familiar with getting things done. We did a whole series about that. I said Evernote was really the perfect pairing. People talked about, you know, other programs. People are trying to get me to switch to Notion. I don't know if you ever played around with Notion as an Evernote alternative.
It's actually one of the tabs up on my browser right now.
Ah, is this something you're looking into?
Yeah. So I heard about it from Kevin Geary.
Yes. Yep.
2 years ago. Wow. 2019 was 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
Like 2 years ago now. And I played with it a bit then and I bailed on it. And now I'm back into it a bit. So I bailed on it because as like powerful as it is, and as much as like you can go on YouTube and there's a million videos on the million things you can do with Notion.
Right.
It was one of those things where it was like productivity, I don't know, masturbation is the only word that comes to mind.
Why I kind of held off on
flexible.
All of this. Yeah. So not just Notion, but also building a second brain. Like, do I really need to revamp this whole thing? And everything I think is piecemeal. Like, are there principles of this that could just extend into what I already do without having to abandon, you know? I don't think it requires abandoning getting things done.
He puts a lot of GTD kind of concepts into it as well.
That's what I found, sure. So what I'd want to hear about first is like, what did your organization and productivity system look like before you started studying and embracing building a second brain? And then we'll talk about what it looks like now.
Yeah. So I know productivity started for me in that same like 2011, 2012 kind of era, right? Getting things done and caught on Evernote and started capturing things and making all these tags and notebooks and coming up with this whole project note structure. And then I had a whole note for like people to keep track of like birthdays and their kids' names and stuff like that.
And you're like 20 years old doing this.
Yeah. Yep. 18, 19.
Wow.
19, 20. Yeah.
Oh man. If only. All right. So yeah. So you just start basically as like a catch-all, but you're not using it to, I mean, at that point, what are you doing for work at that point?
At that point, so when I started using it, that was probably during about a year or so after high school, where I really wasn't, I wasn't doing much because like, if you look at the outputs of the time that I was spending, it wasn't a lot, but I think I understand now and can look back that I was just trying to orient to life as an adult outside of school.
Yeah.
And so I looked into programming some, and I looked into productivity and self-help stuff and 4-hour work week and started down the like internet marketing, content marketing sort of train. So back then, like work-wise, as far as what did I actually get paid to do, it was like being a waitress guy at Waffle House. But the work that then related to Evernote, honestly, a lot of it was just, again, you could say maybe it was productivity masturbation, but I think at that point for me, it was just even wrapping my mind around like how do you organize and like implement a life and plans and actions one, in a digital world, but two, in a world where there's not really a boss for the things that I want to do longer term.
And when did you discover that, like, you weren't going to have a boss? And how did that change how you were using it, or maybe like enhance or accelerate how you were using it?
Well, so I, like, that I'm not going to have a boss kind of thinking started right out of high school, because I didn't get a job until I was 19.
Yeah.
Like, had zero jobs, just got some allowance money in. But when I started working at restaurants, like, it was literally just, this is a thing to do because I can make money doing it. I like cooking. I could maybe make more money waitressing than like working at a grocery store. But like, I'm not going to be a restaurant person.
Right. Yeah.
So even then it was like the content marketing. Restaurants was make some money, pay some bills while I try to do something that's like a real, like, career, quote unquote, path for me. Mm-hmm. When I left restaurants, like 4 years later, I think that's when it really started evolving, because over the course of the kind of 4 years between I leave high school and start getting into all this like Evernote, getting things done stuff. Until then, there was a lot of like dreaming and playing around with stuff, but there wasn't really a need for a real, honest, get stuff done, keep track of notes system. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until like I started freelancing and doing the content marketing that I like actually had to remember like the tasks I was doing on projects and like different notes for things and stuff like that. So it started evolving there. And over the course of a couple of years, I think at some point, maybe a couple of years ago, yeah, I switched over to Trello for like actually managing tasks and projects.
Yeah.
Because I found, and this is a similar problem I found with Notion as a do everything thing. There's some powerful stuff in there that Evernote's doesn't touch, like can't do and probably won't ever do. But when the system's too flexible, it's just too easy to try to do everything with it, and it's not really good at anything, or it's only good at like one or two of those things.
It Trello has no boundaries.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Trello, like, for the limits that it has on being like a note-taking archiving system, those constraints make it a much better, I think. Like, here's a list of my inbox to-do items. Here's a list of my to-do some point soon, my this week stuff, my today stuff, my done this week, someday maybe, waiting for. Like, I set that all up in Trello, in a Trello board. And then for each one of those cards, like, I can make checklists, I can put some notes in there. And that has been really helpful for me as far as taking on all but the most complex projects I've been able to manage from there. That's not super ideal, but yeah, I think I had just the right amount of constraint for getting stuff actually done.
Right. So I just go back to the boundaries thing for a minute. I think we started with GTD, I did, in 2013, mm-hmm. in a world that was actually far less input overloaded, you know? compared to
it's
today.
It's hard to believe.
It really is, because like doing knowledge work back then, it seemed overwhelming as far as the amount of stuff that you could potentially take in. And it just pales in comparison to the amount of stuff that's being thrown yeah. at us today. So I think I started with a pretty streamlined system with the idea that I would be customized for what my particular needs were. And then because, you know, I don't want to say it's a loose framework that David Allen has, but it certainly does have to be customized, and it just kept expanding and expanding and expanding until, like I've said on the show before, if David Allen saw what I was doing and saw that I was calling it getting things done, he'd probably be upset. He'd probably say, stop calling it that.
Yeah, I think that is one of the big things that has, since diving in, like kind of attracted me to the building a second brain stuff, but was also a reason why a year or so maybe into content marketing, freelancing, so that was, I don't know, 4 years ago now, after like getting by the first year, and it was a struggle, but like I made it, I paid my bills, that was the only work that I did that was income earning, I really just started to flip the switch on, like, I've been the person who's like had big dreams and big ideas, I need to just execute, like shit just has to get done, mm-hmm. and not be like, let's screw around with all this stuff. There's definitely, I appreciate now, and I trust myself more to kind of play around and like spread some paint on the walls, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I just really lasered in on like, this is what needs to get done. And so with that, you said you're getting things done system expanded, and mine did too. And it really wasn't necessarily getting things done. And then really lasering in on like, what's actually necessary here, instead of let me waste 3 hours like organizing, quote unquote. I've come to appreciate that the complexity stuff, like it is a distraction. And I think that's something that it's a distraction, but it's part of how you learn and process stuff. But yeah. Also you have to do the thing and work the system to know what you really need. And extracting principles is also like valid. So if you don't follow David Allen's exact system, that's fine. He talks about tickler folders. I never once had a tickler folder because I realized right away, electronic calendars, that's a way better place to put something that I need to be reminded about at a certain time than putting a thing in a manila folder that I have to then go through and check like a date in the future.
Right. Yeah. Nothing about getting things done ever translated into like real actual physical space for me. I think I might have experimented with like a physical inbox once.
I've had one since the beginning. You get a piece of like, right now I have an interest thing from my bank saying, hey, put this on your taxes because we paid you like $5 in interest last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, every once in a while. But I think that like the principal stuff like that sticks and that is valuable. And that's part of what kind of makes it like, if you can really internalize the principles of the system, I think that's the most valuable thing because the tools are going to change. The actual details are going to change. And so that's only going to stick for so long. Like I think about 4-Hour Work Week too. Like if you read that book today, I would probably still recommend it. But the point of that book, like the tactics he mentions, a lot of them are outdated. Like testing your like blog name via Google pay-per-click ads. Like,
yeah,
that's not a bad strategy still, but the way you actually would execute that and how much it would cost and all that is completely different. Like there's almost certainly better ways to do it.
Right. And I think that was something that David Allen understood from the beginning is that all the details would change. Mm-hmm. Getting Things Done, I think, was written in 2001.
2002 is when it was published.
Yeah. So the fact that he's still consulting and that's still a brand that's going strong means that it's adaptable based on having solid principles. Now, am I oversimplifying in your mind if I just say it's mindful input, process, and output?
Yeah. And I also think the organization piece was there. So some of the stuff that carries over to building a second brain with levels of focus and horizons, and then also like this concept of actionability.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think also too, and Tiago mentions this in one of his specifically one of his blog posts, like these eras of like how to be successful. The one that he says we're currently in is this David Allen founded process oriented era.
Right. So the organization would be part of the processing, I would say.
Yeah. Like the buckets that you have available to put stuff in and mm-hmm. how that's structured and why those buckets are the way that they are is sort of that part of the process. It's like, okay, if a piece of information comes in, I have a way to analyze how to sort it. Part of that is like, what are my buckets available to sort it into?
Right. So I think in going from just clutter, and the metaphor that I used when we did the shows all those years ago was like, you feel like there's a swarm of bees around you.
Yeah.
Getting away from that and establishing some kind of presence, right, towards being more productive, which is ultimately the goal. But I think like the mental payoffs are just as important, that you don't feel chaos, right? You're getting serenity through force, I think is what David Allen calls it, by forcing all of these things at least into a place. So you do this mass sweep cleaning. You know, it's kind of like Jordan Peterson's thing comes into this too, the clean your room, right?
Yep.
Your room is a physical manifestation of your mental processes, right? So whether it's your office or your bedroom or your whole house, having that clean kind of forces you inward to clean up there. If order in that sense is part of your external world, it needs to be part of your internal world, which I think is a big part of his message.
Yeah, I will say I like Tiago's suggestion for that better. Like one of his process, how to start doing para is like literally take everything you already have.
Yeah.
Create a folder that's like archive today's date. Put it all in that folder. You're done.
Yeah.
I think that's way less stressful than like doing, what's David say? Like you might have to block like 2 or 3 days to go through one by one every piece of something. But yeah, I think the another thing that, and this is really as I've gotten into it, been appealing to me from kind of Tiago's message and strategy is it's really, I think, about training yourself, kind of like you said, going inward to be a more organized person in your thoughts and your actions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's probably the most valuable takeaway. And that's also the most like kind of BS, like, oh, just follow the principles, man, and like become a better person, work on your human capital. Like, yeah, well, that's great. But that gets done by actually doing things and actually working on kind of training yourself to do something a new way.
Mm-hmm.
But that new method and system is maybe more like crutches or a cast than it is necessarily. Maybe like a car, where like a car is a definite new way that you stick, like you get in a car. Cars are going to be the way that they are,
yeah,
probably at least another two decades, maybe more. You're not going to change day to day how that works, or there's not going to be a radical shift in that mode, versus the David Allen getting things done system, I think, is more like crutches. It helps you train some things, but then once you've kind of internalized the flows of it, you let go of the crutches that are his exact, this is exactly the steps you take, and you mm-hmm. kind of make it your own.
And then maybe down the road, like me, you ask the question, have I, wandered too far away,
mm-hmm.
right? So that was kind of like one of the reasons why hearing about this in 2019 and then doing a big yearly review at the end of 2020 and saying, this has become very unwieldy. It definitely at some point needs some updating. Even if I don't have time to do the full clean and reevaluation and reset, it's probably something that has to happen in some form. So the audience is familiar with the principles and the method of getting things done. What do you feel as far as principles, building a second brain adds to it or really changes?
From what I've gathered, and I know because we talked a little bit before, that you apparently somewhere Tiago wrote, like, specifically here's like the big broad principles. But for me, I think what I gathered, what lit up for me in going through the material of it is kind of the simplicity message of keep your system simple, organizing things by actionability rather than certain sort of categorical tagging structure, like this is a recipe or this is a fried chicken dish. Being opportunistic about how you approach your organization and even sort of your note-taking, so that you can kind of maximize your ability to capture things in a smooth way and sort of push off the heavy lifting that is really processing a note, really thinking about it, and or actually doing something, taking an action on it up until the point that you actually have a really good reason to do that. And I think the last big thing that I've taken away from like a principle standpoint is relying more on intuition. This is something I've been kind of exploring the past year or so. Two, because like where I was at when I left restaurants to get into the work that I've been doing with the consulting, I really had to have a lot of crutches. Like I really needed a strong structure to either live in or at least work towards when I kind of fell off the wagon in the various ways.
Yeah.
In order to do that internalization and train myself in the last year or so, I've kind of realized, you know, I'm still not where I want to be because that's a good way to be in life.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah. I've made a lot of progress, and now I'm just it's felt like now has been the time to shift more towards do more things kind of based on your instincts and intuition, because you do know a few things, but there's costs and drawbacks and there's fail points of trying to make sure everything is like this perfectly rigid, organized system that gets followed and gets processed this way every single time. A lot of things that might break a specific rule set of your organizational system really don't matter.
Yeah. So I'm just processing all of that and in comparing the two systems. One of the principles of getting things done that might be a little bit outdated is certainly an idea that I picked up. Even if I made this mistake, I think it was sort of implicit in what David Allen was suggesting, was that just be a vacuum cleaner and go out and get everything, you know, and
yeah,
just put it in your inbox. And that's why it's such an arduous task to initially set the system up, because you have to gather like everything that you have. But what did everything that you have mean in 2002 or even in 2012, yep, 10 years later, right? Versus like how much information for doing certain types of knowledge work or content creation you could be gathering haphazardly or unintentionally today. And when I say unintentionally, I don't mean by accident. I mean without, you know, intentionality about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the simplifying of the system is his step one instead of capture, like Tiago Forte's step one is remember. So that's, I think, a useful adaptation on capture, right? Capture is what a vacuum does.
Yep.
Capture is what a fishnet does. You know, remember is about adding some intentionality to the things you're gathering based on maybe like some bigger picture awareness of what you're creating. David Allen was right. The world of knowledge work is ever changing and it can be chaotic and you might not know what you need. But because the input overload is so much greater today, I think you have to be more discerning at that initial step, which is a lesson that I learned kind of the hard way. I mean, I can't say the costs are too high, but if I found that I was capturing so much information that I'm almost reverting back to the original problem of the bee swarm, you know? But yeah, at least things are going to a place. But then when you get into the like the past the collection of getting things done and into the organizing and processing and organizing, saying, geez, I need to make more places for more things to go because it's just based on some interest or on some someday maybe or something that I want to incubate. So I found that, you know, Tiago's three steps are what he calls remember, then connect, which is finding ways to link need to remember pieces of information together. And ultimately, step three, or the output in his case, is create. So to know what you are working on big picture, I think is very, very important. And it's not like David Allen says, don't worry about what you're working on big picture. I mean, that's kind of the whole point. And he even talks about that with his
50,000 foot view.
Yeah, the altitudes. Right. So like these are the things in front of you. This is where you want to be in the short term, medium term, long term, as if a plane taking off on a runway. But first you need to clear the runway of debris so a plane could actually take off. And that's that initial organization and capturing that David Allen is talking about. So a couple other unique things about building a second brain that we're going to talk about today in what I think is kind of like a big picture introduction. And then we'll do another conversation more specifically about managing projects. One is PARA, which is an acronym. The other is called progressive summarization. And I think this is actually was really useful for me to like, could you be taking higher quality notes as a kind of gift to your future self?
Yeah.
Because the search feature in Evernote is not super great, right? Especially if you're just like looking for certain keywords, it's at the very least, it's returning too many results. And it doesn't really do very well. From what I found, it doesn't really do well with like keyword combinations. So like I would think if I could put in three keywords, I should be able to find one note, right? But it hasn't worked out that way. And it returns often a lot of clutter. So being a better note taker, right? So the building blocks of the whole system are these notes that you're taking. So whether you're capturing them off the web, but being more deliberate, thinking more like a curator at that stage, I think is really, really important because just capturing things doesn't necessarily, I mean, I have thousands of notes that have absolutely no use to me ever. And part of the, one of the things after I did the yearly review that I ultimately just kind of gave up on was like trying to get rid of notes that I didn't need. Right. But they're just, there's too many holes to go down, rabbit holes to go down in the whole, in my whole Evernote system to even like extract them all and move them to the trash. So they're there. But one of the things that it made me want to do is just be more careful about how I'm collecting in the future for the purpose of remembering, for the purpose of connecting and, you know, ultimately getting things done.
Yeah. And that's definitely something that as a theme, I've liked what Tiago has been getting after with the building a second brain. Part of my sparking my interest in this was trying to connect those higher levels of purpose and aim to my day-to-day work because I've gotten, like I mentioned, with kind of the leaning more intentionally into being intuitive about things, being more ruthless about what stays, what goes, what comes in, what I save. I think it was a couple years ago, 2018 now, 3 years ago. Wow. That at some point towards the beginning of the year, I laid out like three goals. It doesn't really matter what they were, but I just kind of like thought it'd be cool to have these things. I put it on some Evernote note, didn't review that note, thought about those things from time to time. And like by August, I like was just remembering, recalling that note and was like, I've checked like two of those three boxes and I didn't try. I didn't, there was no project. There was no actual sort of plan. It just happened. And so, yeah, I think the remember versus the capture thing, tying what you're doing to like those valuable things that are valuable to you, that you kind of understand because you have this, these higher levels of awareness and then connecting that in order to create, putting it into a system, formatting those notes in a way, storing them in folders in a way that makes it so you can kind of remember those things, recognize those things as you're naturally just going through looking for something that you are intentionally looking for. You see all these other things pop up that are related to it. I think it's a really powerful concept. And yeah, that curator piece that you mentioned, I like the kind of the artistry of it. It goes with the intuition sort of piece, relying on that, training your intuition to just be better at sorting things, what you should be paying attention to out for you. Ruthless has come up a couple times. I think I've said it now, but that's the way that I've been thinking about it too. Like, I just got way more ruthless about, I'm never going to use this for anything.
Yeah.
And so there was a bunch of stuff that it already captured. I think my last Evernote inbox I created, because I made one and then I got too deep and I just shoved it in an archive, made another, did that like two or three times. I think the last inbox probably has 1,000 some notes in it, and I'm not ever going to go through and delete them, because a lot of that, like you said, it was just capture everything, and most of it wasn't actually valuable to anything that I really care to remember.
Right. And there's some kind of like celebration of messiness that I've seen. I don't know how common this is, but people say, look at Steve Jobs' desk. It's covered with shit, right? Isn't this a beautiful thing? And maybe the same was said about somebody like Einstein, I think. But I would say it's a safe bet that those were minds that had a greater capacity to like manage and sort information than mine. So maybe let's say Steve Jobs has an IQ of 160, just arbitrarily picking that, right? That's higher than mine. So maybe that introduces a greater capacity to manage a mess like that, where I just can't, you know? It's just, for me, those kinds of messes, which was, you know, before I started using GTD, was pretty much my whole life. You know, I'd get up in the morning, make coffee, go on Facebook. Before GTD.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm just sucking up useless inputs, you know, for an hour before I even do anything. But one of the reasons why I wanted to do a pretty substantial revision to this is, just imagine somebody finding, like opening my Evernote after I die. And I'd like them to be able to look at it and go, I understand how this guy thinks. I understand what this guy's purpose was. And not like, oh, this guy must have been a hoarder. You know, this guy must have just had like little walkways in his house because he had so much clutter. He just couldn't let anything go.
Yeah.
And his life didn't make any sense. So I don't want a mess in here. And I actually found that this para principle that he introduces in Building a Second Brain was one of the most useful ways to take what I already thought was a pretty decent top-down organization system and make it much better, much simpler, even without necessarily having to remove anything. So, you know, I had in Evernote, you have notebook stacks, right? And I would say most people who are in our audience, and certainly most people who are still listening to this conversation at this point, are familiar enough with Evernote to know that, you know, the structure, the sort of hierarchy is there are individual notes, which could be anything from a handwritten note you take a picture of or scan, or I think you can even like write on your phone with your finger.
And some of them,
save them. It can be PDFs that Evernote can actually read and search. It can be notes that you just type into Evernote. It can be pictures. It can be audio recordings. And then from there, you're trying to collect them into some kind of coherent related picture. You know, I'm just looking at what is one of my notebooks, Building a Second Brain series. That's relevant. And that has just three notes in it. It has like an overview kind of outline of the whole topic. It has some notes that I took when I re-listened to my interview with Moritz for the summit earlier today. And it has a summary of what para is. And that's actually, that is a better notebook than if I go back and look at my notebook for, which I have, and I could pull up really quick. It's in a section called resources, concepts and topics, right? So resources, concepts and topics is a notebook stack, which is the top of the hierarchy, meaning it's a collection of notebooks of notes. And I go to the notebook for, let's see, productivity reference, this is called. So these are all the notes that I used to create that series back in 2013. So I do see that one of the notes is a master outline of all the different episodes and what we discussed. The rest of it is just a clusterfuck, right? It's all these little like blog clippings from like Lifehacker and, you know, all those sites that used to be popular. So beyond notes, and these are poorly written, not thinking as a curator kind of notes the further we go back. So it's hard to tell why they're there, why I wanted them. There's no reference point. Like, this is the purpose of this note in the context of this project. So then you go to notebooks, which is a collection of notes, and then a notebook stack would be a collection of related notebooks. So a notebook stack in the old system might have been like current projects or projects on hold or future projects. And then there would be notebooks that I was collecting notes in related to future projects. And all that stuff still exists. It's just now better organized in its hierarchy. That was a long introduction to talking about what Para is.
Yeah, the thing that I kind of took away from that is like as messy as that resources something notebook that you had is, like, now imagine if you had some super complex tagging system that needed to be applied to all those as you were making them. Now imagine if you had some regular weekly review where you had to go through every single one of those notebooks and like organize notes in a certain way. Like that is a lot of overhead that didn't need to be done because guess what? Like you got the series done.
Hi, this is Brett. You know, on a lot of the podcasts you listen to, there's a sudden interruption somewhere near the middle of the show where the host breaks in to tell you about socks or underwear. But here at School Sucks Project, we believe that the obtaining of comfortable socks and underwear is a kind of foundational life skill that should already be settled before tackling higher level endeavors like understanding the contents of this podcast. This is just one of the reasons why our podcast is never interrupted by advertising. But the most important reason is you, the listener. Our show is made possible by your support, and you can offer that support to keep us going and growing, and also in exchange for a plethora of entertaining and educational bonus content, including the Discomfort Zone Picture of the Month Club, the University Weekly Discussion Groups, and In Pursuit of Utopia, by going to patreon.com/schoolsucks or schoolsucksproject.locals.com. And now back to the show. I'm so sorry I did this. How annoying.
So you can look at everything and you could get some idea of like what needs to be updated, what needs to be checked, what needs to be interacted with more regularly than other things, right? So at the top, you have inbox, right? So obviously that's your go-to place. That's where all your captures are going first in the traditional GTD sense. And then you have areas that are going to be more, you know, inactive, like David Allen talks about someday maybe. Mm-hmm. So at one point for sure, I had one of my notebook stacks was someday maybe. But again, you really don't see a higher level categorization that points you exactly to where your attention needs to be. It's not terrible. It's not like you look at all the notebooks and they seem like they deserve equal attention. But I really think that this Para is a huge organizational improvement over how it was.
Yeah, and I think the actionability has a principle for setting up the four sort of main menu items, so to speak, of Para, projects, areas, resources, archive. Mm-hmm. Those are layered in levels of actionability. So projects are your most actionable. You're working on this stuff right now or at some point very soon. Areas are things that we can get into specific definitions in a second if you want. But areas are just a little more, you want to check on some things frequently, but you're not necessarily day to day or even week to week needing to go in there to find stuff. Resources, even less frequent than areas. And then archive is just, hey, I'm not going to delete this because maybe someday there will be something in here that I didn't realize that my future self would need. But for the most part, you put it in archive. Storage space nowadays digitally is basically infinite. So just keep it. Maybe you will need it, but you probably won't. But you still have it just in case.
Right. So all four of these for me are huge. They're like very voluminous because it's an adaptation from what the system was before with everything that I had collected. I looked at some videos of people who had set this up in Evernote and they have one notebook stack for projects.
Yeah.
They have one notebook stack for areas or areas of responsibility, one for resources and one for archives.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to achieve that simplicity. So I have, you know, the inbox, even my inbox is divided into first contact, meaning like this is when something comes to my attention, it goes to this first contact folder, which is a subfolder in inbox. And then there's something called input inspiration queue, which is just like books or articles that I need to read. Like, so there's like some action to that, but it doesn't get past the inbox until it's processed in some way. Right. So it's just not sitting somewhere else inactive collecting. I mean, this is kind of what I learned from collecting all these notes is like maybe something has to happen with something before it makes it out of the inbox. So there are things that just go into, but I have projects active that I call money now, right? So things that are going to produce income this week. Projects active, this is a whole other notebook stack, money soon, which means they're things that I'm working on that will produce money in the future. Projects money eventually, which are more aspirational. And probably not being worked on currently, meaning they might not be in the right place. Projects, another notebook stack, ongoing, right? So in that would be like affiliate relationships, the Discomfort Zone, Free Market Squad, the series that I do with Nathan. Then there's projects, documentary, which is just about me learning about documentary filmmaking. And that's all the projects, notebook stacks, that are probably still holding 20 notebooks at this point, which is too many. I did have the discipline to create an archive called Projects on Hold.
Okay.
So we're
making some progress.
Okay. So that's projects. The next one is area. Area notebook stack. Personal pursuits. Area school sucks project. Area university. Area BAV, which is just the, it's actually the umbrella of all these things, but it's also the work I do for other people, production work. Personal finance area, fitness and diet is an area, and emotional health is an area. And then resources are concepts and topics, personal, and school sucks. So the school sucks resources list is just like, you know, old artwork, acclaim, mailing list stuff, surveys, focus groups, stuff, the stuff that I could want to use someday. And then archives are incubation, things that are completed, projects on hold, and just a brain dump of things that I might revisit someday, but don't really feel like I need to. That's how it's set up right now.
So you definitely got better. I was super stressed out when you were talking about inbox, even inbox is like, oh, three levels of inbox. That's too many. All those projects.
Two in my defense.
Okay. Yeah. It was too many, too extra, too many. Got better with the areas, got pretty great with the resources, maybe too great because some of the stuff that's in some of those project notebooks probably need to go into areas or resources. And archive.
You're so right.
Archive, I think you did too much, man. Like this is a principle I've been really embracing and implementing over the past couple of years, like simplicity. I will say I appreciate that kind of breaking and redoing your organization system can be pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
When for all of its flaws, it's a thing that you've relied on and it has a lot of habits and a lot of easy workflow for you. But I would just encourage you as you continue along this journey to really consider sticking to mostly what Tiago said.
Yeah.
Here's where I'll give you what my sort of slightly different breakout for it is. And mine's also a little more complex too. So it sounds like you kind of manage everything from capture and storage to project management inside of Evernote.
Currently, but I'm open to adjusting that.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm in Trello. And so even right there, and part of the idea of Para, the system of Para, is that it's replicatable across platforms. Mm-hmm. So it's not like that I'm violating any rule by having multiple platforms. But for me, like, I manage tasks and projects inside of Trello. I am now starting to store stuff in Notion, things that are a little bit further kind of down, more archival / resources kind of things, maybe a little bit of area. And then I have some Google Drive folders that are also set up. But honestly, since the last month or so I've been working on this, I haven't needed to create those a lot more. So I've got a few, I'm like kind of distributed on more platforms, it sounds like, than you.
Yeah.
But I think my setup is a bit simpler in that, for projects, the distinction that I've made, I have a someday maybe list in Trello, and that's one entire board. And that someday maybe projects/task list is organized by my areas.
Okay.
That's one kind of thing. I don't know if I was going to try to think how would that be more straight up. Building a second brain, I guess someday maybe project list, you would have like an Evernote stack for areas. You'd have a notebook for whatever area, let's call it health, which is one of ours that's shared. And then maybe you would have a separate notebook that's like health, someday maybe projects. Mm-hmm. Might be a way you would do that. Just because sometimes I have enough notes or like next action or outcome related stuff that I wouldn't want to just have one folder that is all the project related, or that's all the health area related content that had project ideas mixed into it. Again, with that actionability idea, there's some things with health, like we've talked about this. I got bod pod testing to know like what my lean body weight versus body fat is. That's something that would go into the health folder, is in the health folder, because it's something I'm going to reference as part of that area of ongoing responsibility that is health. But that's not actionable. That's not really actionable. It's just a check-in metric thing versus start doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. At some point, there's an action to take on that. And I just like having that distinction. So for me, projects, because I manage them in Trello, I do have them categorized by area, just as a kind of subconscious sort of checker for me. But Tiago recommends, if you're using something like Evernote that has this notebook stack, notebook note hierarchy, not to organize your projects into your areas, like having an areas notebook and then having like, or an areas stack and then like a sub stack of like this particular area, and then underneath that like projects, which I think makes sense because, again, with the simplicity thing, you're trying to do as little organizational work as possible, just enough to make the information in your system more valuable to your future self, more discoverable as it's needed, but no more.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. If you're going to do like a notebook stack hierarchy, keep your here's how I've seen him do it and how I would do it and kind of how I'm doing it is like, you have your projects notebook, you have all of your sub notebooks of actual projects, but you can use your areas as like a little in the title of the notebook tags, right? So like if you have a health as an area, you can do like H: go to the gym 5 days a week for a month. That's not a good project, but find a new gym. So now you can see, okay, everything with an H in front of it, that's a health related project. If you have another area that is school sucks, you could do SSP: And this way you have one project stack that has, in my mind, it should have only projects you're really actively working on to some degree. Maybe it's you do one thing next week or next month on them, but it's kind of coming up. But then you put that little tag in the name of it, so you just can kind of sort of keep track. Hey, here's what area it's related to, because then if I need some information related to it that's not in my project notebook, let me go to that area because it should be in there.
Okay, so here's the thing with the amount of stuff that I collect. And I understand there's certainly people who would have to collect way more than what I do for whatever they do. Using, like, let's say, I forgot, there's this whole other categorization system, tags, because I only ever use tags for people, right? Because that was useful when you're managing relationships with maybe 20 people related to work, right? To be able to type that person's name in, and there's all the information that relates to them in your system, right? So it's kind of like a personalized, sort of like, I guess, how salespeople would use CRMs.
Yep.
You know, to that, like, oh, we talked on this date, we talked about this. I felt like that was a useful thing. So tags were only ever applied to people. But I'm guessing you could just tag areas, right? Areas could only exist instead of in Evernote, let's say, instead of as notebook stacks. Yeah. They could just exist as tags.
Yeah.
The problem is that when you go to that tag, you just get a shitload of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that I think there's a good idea there, but what that's going to do is that's going to break down your separate things by actionability things. So if you're going to something that's related to health and health only exists as a tag, maybe that piece of information should be in your resources somewhere in a folder, but then you're going to bring up all this project stuff and you're going to bring up all this archive stuff, versus if you have that solid sort of notebook structure, then you know, okay, hey, I'm actively working on a project related to health. Go to the project's notebook stack, go to that project. It should be in one of these notes that's in here, because all the notes in here I'm actively working on.
Right.
If it's something a little longer term, it should be in my health area.
Okay. So this was kind of how I saw it. And I understand that what I shared as far as like how this is set up for me right now is a transitional step from where I were.
Yeah.
I'm definitely interested in more simplicity. Archive is, I'm not ready to delete you, but get away from me. Right, like go away.
I don't think you ever delete archive.
Right.
Why are you going to waste that time?
Right. So that's what I mean. Like, I'm not ready to delete you, whether it's time or letting go. That's not happening right now. Maybe it's not happening ever. So here's a place for you to be. Right. Maybe like in a monthly or a yearly review, I'll do a little exploration and see what's in. I found wonderful things. I used to write down little comedy ideas, and I went through those recently, and I was just delighted by how funny I used to be years ago. Resources is things that kind of come up periodically and unpredictably. Like, I need to send extra layer of identification to get into Coinbase or something, right? And they want a picture of my driver's license.
Yeah.
And I don't have a webcam. So yep. I have the front and the back of that. So that's like in resources, under personal resources, mm-hmm. right? Or like concepts and topics is basically just any project that was about something we did in the past. Like if I'm talking to somebody, right? Like, let's say we're having this conversation and 9/11 comes up.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
As it does.
Then I could, not when you're right in front of me, but if we were like just doing an audio only interview, I could open that resource folder and be fresh on whatever 9/11 mm-hmm. topic you wanted to discuss. Because all that information is there. So that is actually proving useful with things like the Trivium, getting things done, the six pillars of self-esteem, to just be able to, those notes that I took very intentionally 5 years ago, 7 years ago,
yep.
can just be right in front of me.
And those resources.
Right now, which is also good for content creation. So areas are things that are being revisited. They're not technically projects, but are always present in life. You know, like health and fitness. So if I'm thinking about adjusting workouts or looking for core exercises, area fitness and diet can open that and I can find anything in there very, very quickly. But it's not consistent due date action oriented kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? Only projects are that. But currently, based on what I explained to you a little while back, projects is currently the most unwieldy portion of what I've got going on
which
here.
Is the exact opposite of what it should be, because yes. that should be your most like zen-like notebook stack for stuff that's only things you really need to act on.
Right.
And so when you go to that project's notebook, like there's just that, there's as little resistance as possible for you getting to the information that you need to okay. do the next thing you're trying to do.
So in all of these notebook stacks in Evernote, they're all collapsible. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can see just what the stack name is, but you can also open it and you can see all the notebooks in the stack. I used to, like a madman, have every stack open.
Open, never.
Right. So now every stack, and these are like little things. And if people are new to this, they're not still listening. But if people are skeptical about any of this, that's a huge thing. As far as the difference it makes is just to collapse everything.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's open is my double inbox, which I will work on cutting in half. And then current active projects. Those are the only ones that are ever open.
Yep.
So that visually simplifies the system. But I'm still thinking about just this higher level, like detailed categorization, like having these different areas, having these different resources, having these different archives. I will work on the multiple projects, notebook stacks, but is a kind of categorization that helps me with organization. So like it's not just one super folder of area, right? It's broken down into these parts.
Yeah. But I think with that though, like there's room for you to kind of embrace the principle more of like, is this something really important to me? Is this something really actionable?
Oh, sure. To be more thoughtful about this. Absolutely.
Because
it's either that or write to Evernote and say, can you invent a notebook stack?
Yeah. Which somebody thought of and they said, no, that's a bad idea.
Come on.
That was too many.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that's what I think has been valuable for me because I have a similar thing. So the spot that, and here's another complexity that I added to it, but appreciated. I'm also using this note-taking app, Obsidian.md.
Yeah.
Because it's got its own complexities, but I think it's a little bit more simpler, straightforward as a note-taker than Notion is. And it also has this little graph view. So like if you have a note on project lose 5 pounds, you can link to your note last body weight scan. And then you can have a little graph view that shows you when you're in the project note lose 5 pounds. It'll show you this little graph of all the connected ideas and information in there.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's like a beta stage product. What's it say? V0.11.3. So they haven't claimed that they've officially launched yet. If you go to their website, it's kind of confusing. So I don't know if this one's going to last. I don't know that I would recommend other people jump in, but that graph view felt interesting to me. So I've gotten into it, but,
so explain it again, just so we can try and visualize it.
It's called Obsidian.md.
Yeah.
Is where you can find it and get it, and see lots of info, but it's basically a sort of knowledge base. It runs right on your computer. It stores the files on your computer, so there's no cloud involved. You can put it in like your Dropbox folder if you want that backup. If you want to do it for like world domination schemes and not have it in the cloud anywhere,
right,
then it's
right.
good for that too. It's basically a way to kind of take notes, keep things in folders. Also has some pretty powerful search mechanisms. And it uses Markdown formatting, which if you're not a user of Reddit, is basically, it's kind of like HTML in that it's a scheme for using things like hyphens and like dollar signs and parentheses to actually affect the formatting of your page. But Markdown is designed so that once you kind of learn it, you can stay on your keyboard versus having to like click things and highlight text and click buttons. So like as an example, if you're going to make a Google Doc and you, let's pretend you don't know any keyboard shortcuts like I do. If you're going to make a Google Doc and you want to make like an H1 header to start a section of whatever note you're taking, you have to like type it in, highlight the text, move your mouse up to the menu bar, click heading and pick the right header versus in Markdown, you literally type pound sign space your text and then it automatically formats it into that. So that's interesting. I'm learning the Markdown stuff, so there's a little clunkiness there, but theoretically that could speed it up in the future. But
sure, yeah.
The thing that attracted me to it as a tool was that graph view. So I think a lot of listeners are probably familiar with the Brain software.
Yeah.
Which they stopped supporting Linux, which is the operating system I use, so that wasn't an option. But this Obsidian.md has a view where you can see related notes based on how you've interlinked them, which I thought could potentially be powerful for keeping track of stuff.
Now, there are kinds of integration that you could do, but you'd really have to have a need for it because it would be time consuming. So that kind of visualization would have to relate to, and I can't even imagine what they would be, projects where that visualization would be helpful. So you're talking about a program that can show relationships graphically between notes.
Yep.
Okay.
As long as you've interlinked them.
Okay. So Evernote has something like that, even though it's not a graphic representation, but mm-hmm. you have to actually do the work. So on any note, and I use this all the time. In fact, I'd like to see a web of how many notes are linked to other notes.
Yeah.
But if you just right click on any Evernote note, it'll say copy internal link, where it will create hypertext of what the note name is, and you can paste it into any note you want.
Yep.
So if I'm doing an outline on like a fairly complex show, like I was doing, I just saw this note not too long ago with Scott Hambrick on like learning theories. This was probably a couple years ago at this point, but he wanted to go over all these different things. So it had like 10 internal links that I could just right click, open in a new window, and then be on this other note, but it's in this master outline that I created for this one show, mm-hmm. covering, you know, materials from other shows that, you know, were assembled from dozens of notes. So that's a useful feature, but it's not giving you any graphic representation of that. And you have to do all the creation. You have to know what notes you're looking for. So again, you're relying on Evernote search feature to a certain extent. There is a program, I think I pay $3 a month for it. It's called MindMup, and it's like an online brain. It's not the brain. It's actually simpler than the brain. Like people who've used the brain probably notice that like when you go to a different idea cloud, it will minimize other things. So you can't really like see everything at the same time.
Yeah.
So this is actually just like a full zoomed out mind map. And you can move things around as you like. You can group things together as you like. You know, it creates beautiful mind maps that you can turn into PDF. It has all the, you know, you can color code things however you want. You can do the lines any way you can think of. You know, the connecting lines. You can point arrows in different directions. So I was using it just with Andrew to map financial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see lots of applications for that. But you could, if you wanted to create visual online representations of things to share with people. Another feature of Evernote is you just right click and share the note, right? And when you do that, it'll give you a shareable link. So you could create online mind maps that you could share with, you know, clickable PDFs or clickable links in them and just link them to online versions of your notes. But again, that's a lot of work and there better be a good need for it, which I haven't found. But I'm always a big fan of visually representing things wherever possible. So,
yeah, I will say definite like productivity porn territory with all this stuff. I started by trying to build my notes that I was taking in Obsidian with that graph in mind, and I realized I was overcomplicating things. So I actually haven't used it a lot, but I definitely, part of why I thought it was potentially valuable inside of the context of building a second brain was the sort of recognition, discoverability, serendipity sort of piece of being able to have a project note, link it into kind of this broader network of concepts and ideas, and then potentially be able to visually see that network and remember how some things are connected and make new connections based on that. So I definitely see the power of that. A little bit of overhead in Obsidian, you do have to intentionally make those interlinking connections, but it's all, if you take on Obsidian as your main note-taking app, again, it's in like beta stage. It doesn't seem like it's got a real company. It's more of a community project. It might not go anywhere. Don't get rid of your Evernote and move everything into here because it might be gone in 2 years. But that seemed like, this is my main note-taking app. I'm still largely using it as this folders note sort of structure, and that's the most functional day-to-day. Perhaps a year from now, if I'm still kind of working the system, that graph functionality becomes really, really useful.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. All right, so we spent a good amount of time on one of the defining principles of building a second brain, which is para. The other one that we were going to talk about today was progressive summarization, which is more about taking better notes. My understanding is you have a primary source of info that is captured, right, that you want to remember. And then you're kind of adding layers of intent to it, right, and grouping it with other things that are related, but you're making it more actionable instead of just another thing that you're storing. But
making it more, the two kind of things that he mentioned is discoverability and understanding. So you're trying to balance these two priorities with your notes of discoverability and understanding. You want to be able to find the information that you need when you're actively trying to learn some new thing or create some project. So we want to build notes that are discoverable. And we also want to make sure our notes are understandable because, yeah, if you've got the exact piece of information that you need, but it's buried in, you just literally clipped the entire web page of some news article and you go to look at that, as you're just trying to find some piece of information, your brain's going to look at that whole news article and just say, that's way too much work. You're going to gloss right over it. And so based on trying to kind of balance those two priorities, make discovering the information that you're trying to find as simple and easy as possible. And that's done using compression. So basically kind of condensing the information, the knowledge in your note in various layers. But you also want them to be understandable. If you read an article and you write some half, not even a real sentence, like set of words about it, and that's all you save, and then you save like a link to the article, like you're not going to really understand what you meant 2 months from now.
Right.
Likely.
And this seems intuitive, but when you're like gathering a lot of stuff, you can kind of get lost.
You jot those things down.
Right. So Evernote actually has a feature in the web clipper where you can just highlight and say, capture just this excerpt.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're looking, instead of just grabbing a whole article and then being like, what the fuck, you could go through the article with more attention and intention in the beginning. And maybe what would have been one note is, you know, five or six.
Yep.
But then each one of those notes is like, oh, okay, I see the purpose of this specific thing.
It could be, but I think you could go even simpler than that. So Tiago, he talks about this opportunistic sort of concept as a way to manage what he calls return on attention. So we don't want to put any more effort than we need to capture something when we're in capture mode, because maybe it actually doesn't need that much work to split it into six notes.
Yeah.
Maybe it needs more work, but the way that you kind of assess does it need more or less work is, again, rely on your intuition, rely on that instinct. If you have an instinct to capture the thing, capture it. If you don't have an instinct or you're a little ambivalent, make a quick decision about whether you're going to do it or not and just move on with your day. And so then he talks about kind of in this opportunistic capture and then summarization, progressive summarization, call it six different levels. So level zero is the actual original source, whole cloth, blog post, YouTube video, audio recording, whatever. Then the first sort of step of taking that original source and putting it into your system is capturing original sources. And he says his just rough instinct is he probably captures 50% of the info that he consumes. That still maybe is you capture the whole article in your Evernote, but you're just maybe more thoughtful about how much you capture. It could also be that you do only capture 50% of the things that catch your eye, and capture means you're actually taking some notes on it. I think that could get a little tedious, especially with something like Evernote Web Clipper, where it's so easy to to just click that button and have the whole thing kind of get stripped into Evernote. Trying to manually take notes right away is maybe too much. The second layer is bolding the best parts. Again, this is based on your intuition. So I'll get through the layers first. The third is highlight the best parts that you've bolded. The fourth is create a mini summary of the note, actually taking the time now to summarize the initial notes.
Sure.
And then the fifth is what he calls remixing, which would be, in his terms, because he is a quote-unquote knowledge worker, creating the podcast, creating the video, creating the presentation, creating the blog post, or I might say actually doing something actionable with it. And so the idea is to try to separate out these layers. You don't do them all at once. You don't capture something and then immediately go through and bold it and then immediately highlight the best parts and then immediately create it. You do these one step at a time. So when an original source comes by your way, about 50% of the time, you go ahead and you capture it. Then maybe right away, because I've done this a little bit, so maybe I'm trying to justify it, but maybe right away, if you do capture the original source pretty wholly, you pull some of it out as your own notes or you bold a couple of things. Then at some point in the future, when you're trying to do something, when you're trying to consolidate some learning, when you're trying to connect ideas, when there's a piece of information you're looking for, you go back to your system, you find this note again, then you're going to go ahead and bold things that are, again, based on your instinct, feel important to you. And he says he does that for about 25% of the notes that he takes or the information that he comes across his field of view. Then again, go away to find the information you need, bold some things as you're looking for that information, and then go on doing the thing that you're trying to do. Again, if you come back to this note because you're trying to do something, highlight some of those bolded sections as like, these are the really important pieces of information here. Again, within the context of whatever stands out to you at the time, and only when you're already in that note because it already had some information that you were trying to use and work with.
Right.
It says about 20% of his notes get highlighted. Then 5% of his notes get summarized. Same principle, opportunistically summarizing only when you're trying to find some information contained in the note and only when you're trying to actively do something and that's why you're in the note. Less than 1% gets actually turned into another piece of content or something.
Okay, so a related thing, I'll give an example of something that I did, and it's like going through something knowing exactly what you're going to do with it is also helpful, mm-hmm. right? If you can get there, if you have that luxury. So last spring into summer, I did a series with our friend Daryl called This Is a Test, and we watched a lot of videos about virology and PCR tests and different theories of disease and all this stuff. Now, these videos are usually just talk over graphical representations. So I would watch a 40-minute video and just be like, yeah, guess I'll have to start that again.
Yep.
You know, if I wasn't being careful about it. I mean, and I'm not saying that happened in this case, but if I was watching something that was really information dense, thinking that I'm giving myself, a helping hand by doing it through video. So it's like somebody else is going to help me process it versus reading it. Like someone is actually going to be explaining it to me. This is kind of a shortcut. If that wasn't helpful with really sort of abstruse information, the Web Clipper has something called Screenshot, which is very useful.
Yeah.
So to build these outlines for the series that I did with Daryl, I would go through one of these videos and basically screenshot each frame. Like maybe the video maker would hold a frame for a couple minutes and just talk over it. So I would grab the frame. You can just when you take the screenshot, it just copies it, right, and puts it on your clipboard, and then you can just paste it right into the note. So then you can summarize right on the spot. You can make meaning of this screenshot is here because it will be used to talk about this, and this is what this screenshot means. And maybe that's like 4, 5, 6 sentences that you have to write.
Yep.
But you can also annotate the screenshots as images, right? So you can highlight a certain thing. This screenshot is here because it's focused on this thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times people do informational YouTube videos basically as what's that Microsoft Office thing called that
Excel?
No, the one that
OneNote? Word document?
Oh, man. I can't believe it's going to be your
Outlook?
Fifth guess, but no, the one whenever, any office thing when there's some guy going, oh, here's a presentation, PowerPoint.
Oh, PowerPoint, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of YouTube videos are just PowerPoint presentations, and you can just grab the slides that way and annotate them on the fly as you watch the video.
Yeah.
So that is a useful time saver. I definitely had to do that because of the information density. And it's not just this is all right information, right? Like we were watching videos of people like, I'm not sure where this guy, like the Kaufman stuff, right? Like, I don't know if I should trust this guy. So not only do I not have, and that's, one of the beauties of creating your own theories about very complex things is that the average person has no understanding of the foundational knowledge of that thing. So, you know, that's strike one and two is like, I'm not sure what this guy's talking about, and I'm not even sure what the foundation is. So you have to learn the foundation and then capture what this guy's talking about and make sense of it. That was a lot of work, but that was definitely a note-taking strategy that was very helpful related to what Forte's laying out there. So any other thoughts? Because we did a lot today.
We did. Yeah, I think that just a comment on the last piece you said about the YouTube videos. I think that's great. Again, nuances that I'm still trying to figure out. I think, I don't know exactly what he means by taking note. Again, capture the whole thing or not. It's probably in reality a mix of them. But
well, if zero is grab the YouTube video,
yeah,
you've done nothing, really. You've just, yeah. Well, I mean, you've done more than nothing because now you don't have to go, oh man, I saw this YouTube video that I need to find. Like, you have it, but you've really done nothing to engage with it in any kind of meaningful way. So it's like, if I'm working on this now, if I'm watching this now, it means I'm working on this now. So make the note, capture and remember now, so it can be connected and then turned into the creation in as streamlined a way as possible.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think the other thing too, that was in the context of was an active project.
Yeah.
And I think that does something different. So if you're just, I don't know, Google News is the only thing I can think of. If you're just browsing Google News and you see an interesting story, that to me, I think is the kind of thing where maybe you capture that whole cloth, it goes to your inbox. And then when you're processing your inbox, you put that Google News article, don't touch it other than to put it into whatever is the relevant resources folder or maybe areas folder.
Mm-hmm.
And then only start doing this progressive summarization of like maybe taking some notes, bolding certain things about it,
right,
highlighting. Right. Only do that for a note like that goes straight to your resources if you come back to it in the future, because yeah, probably 90%, 80% of your things that feel like they're good resources at the time, even if you're being pretty discerning, they're not going to get touched. Versus if you're actively in a project like that, yeah, and I, again, I've done this too with some of my notes. It's like, yeah, I know I'm spending the time on this note right now for an actual direct purpose.
Yeah.
And I also know that this piece of information is going to be really important for me 2 days from now when I come back to this note, and I know I'm coming back to this note very soon. So I'm going to go ahead and put the highlight on it because I know this is the thing. This will be a thing I would have highlighted anyway.
Right.
But just don't do that for every single thing that you capture and be more discerning about the things that you capture. What I really like about the progressive summarization and the para too is like, yeah, the simplicity stuff kind of rules the day. Really leveraging that, I think, what is it, system one, intuitive, fast thinking approach.
Yeah.
And kind of being more discerning about curating things based on how useful is this going to be action wise.
Being realistic with yourself, yeah, about what you can do. Yeah.
I think all those things are really great. And so far, it's felt like overhead just in a change of way that I'm doing things sort of thing. But just as I'm reading some of these posts and just opportunistically, because I'm struck with the inspiration to start implementing some of the stuff, doing that implementation, it's felt really good in that kind of like to swing back to your thing with getting things done. What I have now doesn't feel like a really nice and clean para implementation as he would do it.
Right. Yeah. Same.
Maybe my folders are a little bit cleaner than yours because I followed his advice.
Must be. Yeah.
I like even down to like my hard drive, like photos that I've collected over the years in my pictures folder. That nope. Through all those photos in that archive, whatever it was, 2/27/21. And so that's felt really good. And I think those principles of focusing on the actionability has gone really well with some other stuff that I've done as far as like connecting my day-to-day work and focus to the higher levels. This has felt like that's taken the brakes off now that I've been able to better connect to those higher levels through some work from the guy, Taylor Pearson, who you recommended to me. This is really taking the brakes off of, okay, I've got a way to tap into that higher level thinking. Here's how I can make that more smoothly translate into getting things done than I've been able to before.
Excellent. I want to ask one more question as I look at my computer screen. You're a man with your finger in a lot of pies. You too young for that saying?
I know that saying. I'm
okay.
I'm comparing it to my felt reality.
No, but you have a variety of different interests. You're always learning new things, and a lot of that requires time on some kind of web browser, right?
Yep.
So, do you use any system of grouping tabs? I don't even know this plugin that I'm using on Firefox, but it will create these separate windows that it'll just like send one whole window of tabs to sleep, and only one window can come to the top and be active. So I have all of the, I probably have 100 tabs open on my computer, which sounds like a violation of every organization system ever. But I have, you know, so I have a tab group called Calendar Frequent, right? Which are just like, it's Google Calendar, Messenger, maybe Amazon. Well, actually, I'll just go there. I'll tell you what's happening there right now. Maybe I will. Sorry. This will be fixed in post. Oh, this is that. All right. So it's Scribd. It's Checkout. It's a note that I opened for this on progressive summarization, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's these other tab groups like SSP Production, which always has like Podomatic, Patreon, SoundCloud, Locals. Like those are all open. If I just click that, then it loads that window as the only active window.
Yep.
And then there's more, Alex. There's a lot more. There's reading and show prep, affiliates, Anniversity, new website, entertainment, BAV production, In Pursuit of Utopia, Free Market Squad, Podcast Network, Quantum Growth, which was a course I was taking, and then financial stuff, which currently has 13 tabs open.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do anything like this?
I do. First, I will say I use Brave Browser, not Firefox. Tried it a couple of years ago, and it was too early, and tried it a year ago, and now it does everything Google Chrome does except track you quite as much, at least. And yeah, I use tab groups, but really, and this is part of my ruthless trend, so I think with where you're at, it's there. You, with where maybe you quote-unquote should be and where I am, I think there's steps for you to take towards me, but I'm not saying that you should come to where I am. I've been ruthless about it. I actually am looking at my tab sessions and I don't have anything saved here. I do have a couple of different profiles. So I guess actually that's not true. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different profiles. Really 2 or 3 of them are active and they have different sets of tabs. And there's maybe 30 to 50 tabs between the three of them.
Okay.
But I am like super ruthless about what those are, right? So I do have some that are maybe more, to use the para term, area-esque. So one is like a certain Google account that I use just for client work. Another one is a set of tabs just for one client. And then there's a couple for personal projects. So it's a little bit of a mix of some of those tabs are more areas and that I only use them every once in a while. And then some are actual project sort of based in that this is a set of tabs where the active project I'm working on, this contains all the tabs to stay open from that. So yeah, I think I'm not going to go ahead. I don't think I actually can with the way profiles work, separate these out into groupings. But yeah, I guess I would say for me and recommendation for you coming closer to me, but not having to go this far, just try to think of your tab sets more as like they should be projects or areas, active projects, not something made to be right. Projects or areas. So this is a set of tabs where these are active projects that I'm working on. Here's those set of tabs that are areas like the B, what is it, BNT thing.
What's BNT?
BAT. What's the BA? What's the set of tabs for the work you do for other people?
Oh, the production work?
Yeah.
It's BEE, like a B.
Oh.
A/V, which are also my initials.
It is. BNT is a crypto thing, and I've been paying way too much attention to it. So.
Yeah.
called myself out there. Yeah, so I think you're kind of on the right track. I would just say kind of challenge yourself. When's the last time you open those things? When's the likely next time you're going to open
them? I mean, they're open because like there are tab groups that honestly I haven't been into forever. And just
delete them.
Yeah, I mean, there's still Self-Care Initiative, which was this guy, Jason Seib, that I was an affiliate for. And I'm like, geez, if I close that tab group, I'll lose my login information. So whatever. So I just like, I scroll by it and only put that much thought into it. But that's not even true. I could grab the login information and save it.
And close it. That's exactly what I do.
I'm going to delete 5 of these right after this show. Yeah,
because that gets into something we'll talk about next time as we get into the just-in-time project management. One of the things he mentions in there, a little foreshadowing, is... kind of making discrete packets of work and then keeping a status of things. And so it's a little bit different with the login info, but for something like that, like that should be able to be a closed off tab group because you should be able to have that state saved in a way that doesn't require you to keep that tab group open.
I absolutely agree. And that's kind of why I asked is like, okay, well, if I'm looking on one computer screen at my Evernote and then on my other computer screen at my browser, why does my browser need to have 80 tabs open?
It doesn't.
Right.
A lot of those go straight to your resources or areas or projects and get closed out as tab groups.
Absolutely. So what a discovery.
Yeah.
And that's going to save RAM, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
So, Alex, thank you very much. I look forward to continuing this conversation and talking about project management. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
The feeling is mutual, Brett Vinat. Thanks for having me.
Simple as that, feel simple as simple. Hey, wish you would have called, I should have been. They tried to tell me they don't get it, they don't know the deal. Now I'll be damn, I came this far to let a fool live. I gotta terminate the hate, spread the positive. Without it being wacky, cheesy to the little kids. So I curse like a sailor and a smoke weed. I am exactly who an older rapper's kids be. And who they love, hands to the universe. Probably think they drug addicts, if they spit a teddy verse. Mad little mama, switch the converse without a purse. Long as the booty looking juicy and he's styling on her. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. It's simple as that, for your simple ass. It's simple as that, it's simple as that. One, two, three.
As our hero seems to be dreaming in peace, a dark chapter unfolds, throwing Scott into the most eerie and unstable part of his imagination. So intense he cannot tell his dreams from reality. This is the rise of the Night Terrors.